Well, welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the January 31, 2016 session, focusing on Luke chapter 4, verses 21 through 30, Mirror, Mirror on the Wall. I'm David Cassidy, and I'm joined for this episode by our good friends Nikki Hardiman, Daniel Glaze, and Bert Montgomery. Now, before we jump into the text for today, I did just want to suggest a thought. A lot of us, including myself, use Faith Element for teaching in our Bible study groups. And it may be, if you haven't already, that you might want to take advantage of the podcast as a way of helping persons in your group to, to consider the text in advance or even after the time you get together. Share the link. If you go to faithelement.net and click on the podcast link, that's freely open and available to anyone. All the podcasts are there, and you can just click on any of those and share the link or share them on social media. We, of course, would appreciate the sharing, but we also really hope that, we would love to be also in conversation with those persons who are in your groups and would love to be part of their learning and conversation around this text. So, okay, well, Bert, can you help us get started with today's text?
Today's text is essentially part two in Luke's story that we began discussing last week. And maybe I should start with a TV voiceover kind of voice previously on Faith Element and quickly summarize the earlier action in Luke chapter 4 and verses 14 and following, in which Jesus is the local small town kid everybody watched grow up. He's the guy everybody knew, his family, and he walks into the synagogue. He's asked to read from the scroll of Isaiah. And Jesus finds a place in Isaiah, and he starts reading. As Luke 4:18 records it, he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has anointed me to bring good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then, of course, Jesus rolls up the scroll and says, "Today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." Now, we pick up here with this week's text, with everyone amazed at the maturity and the wisdom of this young man that they once knew as Joseph and Mary's little boy. And if Jesus had just stopped here, perhaps everything might have been okay. But he doesn't stop here. He starts talking about how the prophets are never welcomed in their hometown. And then he begins to give the people a history lesson of all things, a history lesson of how God has in the past ignored the larger religious nation in order to reach out to one specific person here, an outsider, as a matter of fact, or ignored the religious nation as a whole and reached out to one specific person there. Again, an outsider, not one of the chosen few. And you know how we get, how people get, when anyone starts talking about being welcoming of people of other races and other ethnic origins. And these people listening to Jesus are no different from the rest of us. These very people who just a few minutes earlier were smiling with patronizing glee as the little hometown boy could read so well from the scriptures, these very same people are now filled with rage, and they begin clamoring over each other to get to him, and they haul Jesus out of town, and to make sure he doesn't stir up any more trouble with any of this blasphemy anywhere else, they take him to the edge of a cliff to toss him off. But Jesus somehow, miraculously, walks right back through the crowd, unnoticed, and he goes his own way. Now, I just want to add one quick commentary to all this. Have y'all seen the Jesus bobbleheads and dashboard figures? Now, of course, we would never admit it, but deep down, don't we all wish Jesus could be just a little bobblehead, a Jesus we could control, a Jesus who bobs his head at approval with our lives, something, a Jesus we could stick on the dashboards of our cars like some good luck charm, or place on our desk to feel blessed every time we look at him in a stressful moment, or pat him on the head and smile with patronizing glee anytime we need a pick-me-up? As long as the people in the synagogue could smile and swell with pride at how well Joseph's little boy turned out, everything was fine. But Luke makes it very clear, very early in his gospel, that Jesus is not going to be a cute little bobblehead mascot for the people of the synagogue. And if we're paying attention, friends, Luke makes it very clear that we've got a dangerous, unpredictable Jesus on our hands.
So, Nikki, I mean, after hearing, you know, Bert give us an introduction to this text, I mean, I'm curious how you came to, because I know you title many of these sessions. Mm-hmm, yeah. How did you come up with this title, Mirror, Mirror on the Wall, from this text?
That's a good question. I really tapped into, as I was reading the text, it really just occurred to me that so often in the gospel narratives, Jesus holds up mirrors. Jesus is holding up mirrors all over the place. And it's particularly happening here. Jesus holds up the story and basically says to the people, what happened to these prophets? You're doing the very same thing. And I think that oftentimes the gospel holds up a mirror to me, that when I'm reading it, I see, oh, that's what I've been doing, or, oh, that's where I need to grow. And I think that's the nature of the work Jesus does. He just holds up mirrors. So that's where it came from. And, you know, I have children at home and we do a lot of Disney. So so I tapped into that too. It's my world's colliding.
Well, I was just thinking as you were talking, Nikki, that, you know, we talk about truth in such a positive way, the truth of Scripture, the truths Jesus teach. We teach our children to tell the truth. But sometimes when people tell us the truth about ourselves, it is not such a positive thing. I'm reminded of what Barbara Brown Taylor says. She asked the question, have you ever had someone tell you the truth about yourself so clearly that you wanted to kill them to make them stop? When folks tell us the truth about ourselves or hold up that mirror, to use your analogy, it can be painful. Sometimes it's liberating. Sometimes it's painful because it shows where we don't always measure up.
Or where I think it was interesting your choice of words. You said that sometimes people can hold up a mirror and tell us the truth about ourselves, and it's not always so positive. I would say it's not always so easy, because sometimes people can tell us the truth about ourselves and it can be kind of calling us into power. It can be saying, you know, you are capable of more than you think you are. And kind of calling us. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing, but sometimes even those praises and encouragements can be more than someone can bear. And I've had people do that, and I have wanted to make them stop, very much like you were talking about Barbara Brown Taylor, because it's calling us to action. And I think, you know, there's a degree to which Jesus is calling the people to action. You know, they could see, okay, yes, we are not accepting you, but also they could see that God is calling them to participate, that Jesus is calling them to participate in this gospel ministry of recovery of sight to the blind and letting the oppressed go free and helping with the marginalized people.
You know, this discussion of not wanting to hear the truth or not being comfortable with hearing the truth about ourselves, it reminds me, you mentioned, Nikki, being a fan of Disney movies. Well, this is no Disney movie, but it reminds me of a movie with Jim.
It could be a good one. Disney could make it.
No, it reminds me of a movie with Jim Carrey, one of his early serious roles, if you would, after just being, you know, early crazy, one of his early crazy but serious roles, a movie called Liar, Liar, in which he is a lawyer and a very, very, very good defense lawyer because he's very talented with telling lies and spinning the stories and finding nooks and crannies and loopholes to help even the worst of the worst of the worst of the scumbags he's defending, helping them get off and get out of court and be free, and he makes a living out of it, and it's destroying his family. He's already going through, I think he's going through a divorce at the time. It's been a while since I've seen it, but it's destroying his family. He's always making promises he can't keep to his son and all this stuff. So on the one hand, it's building him up as a great lawyer, as a trial lawyer, defense lawyer, but it's also eating at him and destroying his family, and he has no core. And his son wishes at a birthday wish that his he just says, I wish my dad could not tell a lie. And from that moment on, Jim Carrey is incapable of lying. So he's got, you know, these horrible people he's representing, and he's trying to make them out as angels. Yeah. And he gets in the courtroom, and he's telling the truth about them, like, oh, she's doing this and she's doing that. She's a horrible woman and all this kind of stuff. And he can't stop himself from telling the truth. And the judge yells out, I'm going to hold you in contempt. And he says, I'm holding myself in contempt. Because he's trying to help this horrible woman get custody of kids she doesn't want simply to spite another man. And he's watching his own child, you know, turn on him because he's not a good father. And, you know, so this truth of I'm holding myself in contempt. And then the whole redemption begins to come into play when he has to mesh the truth with who he is and his family. And also holding everyone else accountable for basically being who they are and taking accountability for it, for the bad things they're doing and stuff like that. So this whole idea, we don't want to be confronted with the truth, whatever that is. And yeah, I think it's very scary for when someone is saying it to us and we're facing it ourselves.
Well, you know, you mentioned that movie. It's a great movie, Bert. I haven't seen it in a long time. I need to go check it out again. But it's hard to escape the scenes, the courtroom scenes especially, where it pains Jim Carrey's character to be so truthful.
Yeah.
It is painful, both internally and physically. Sometimes telling the truth can get us in some serious trouble, even hurtful. But it's, you know, that the pain that it causes is particularly poignant in that movie.
Yeah.
Not being able to tell a lie seems good in theory.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Jesus' truth-telling here is that I don't get the impression Jesus seems too concerned with, if I tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Is that going to be heard in the right light? Are folks going to take that and twist it? I don't see him as being overly concerned with that. I see him as saying, here's the truth about who we are. And it causes me to realize, while I strive to be truthful in my life and in my ministry, I am interested in trying to make this thing called faith appealing to folks. And I hope I don't bend or distort the truth in doing so. But the fact is, you know, a careful reading of the Gospels shows us that Jesus preached away more people than he drew to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me just doesn't know what to do with that. But I think it points to the need deep down within all of us that what we need more than anything is the truth, rather than someone to tell us, hey, this thing called faith, it's easy. Anybody can do it. Just come to church when you want to, give a little money here and there, say your prayers before bed, and that's it. That's a lie. That is a lie. You know, the truth of life and love and faith is much more difficult and much more complicated than that.
I mean, I think you're right. I think that the truth, telling the truth of our lives, the truth of what is, can often be very painful. But I think that when it comes down to things that matter, you know, certainly the movie Liar Liar kind of poked fun at this. But I think that ultimately, when the truth is told, there's relief.
Oh, yeah.
That, okay, finally, like, we're not holding this anymore. And, you know, I don't know really how that exactly, I know that's true in relationships. I know that that's true in our human lives. I'm not sure how it plays into this. You know, we don't see the rest. I mean, we see a lot of the rest of the story, but we don't see, like, these people and what they do with what Jesus says after he's passed through their midst. What do they talk about in the next week? Do they ponder on the things that Jesus says? How do they respond to it? Was there some in the crowd who were relieved that Jesus finally kind of revealed what was there? I don't know. I think that truth can bring relief.
Absolutely, it can, Nikki. That's a good way to put, I think, maybe what I was stumbling over. You asked what happened next. I don't know, but here's my guess. My guess is a great number of people said, well, that guy's he's just nuts. Or mm-hmm. he's wrong, he's blasphemous, he's whatever. They write him off. My guess is there's a handful there who said, you know what, he's telling the truth. And I want to follow. I want to follow in that way. It reminds me of a story. This is one of my most favorite stories. My congregation has heard it. But it's one of those stories I love it for it's sort of its entertainment value, but it is I've used this story to try to direct a lot of my life in ministry. Bert, you've talked about Clarence Jordan at Koinonia mm-hmm. Farms before. In early 1940s, founded Koinonia Farms, a interracial farming community, and I think was the spiritual ancestor of Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. But once Jordan visited a rural congregation, I think it was nearby, but it was so thoroughly integrated, not only black and white, but also rich and poor, that it just took him so completely off guard. Well, the church's pastor was just a country preacher, or local farmer with not much formal education. And so after the service, Jordan went over to the pastor and said, tell me, how did your church get this way? What way? The guy said. He said, well, you know, a church with so many different kinds of folks, so full of love. Well, preacher said, when our last pastor left, I went to the deacons and I said, you know, if you'll have me, I'll be the preacher. So they consented. The first Sunday, he said, I opened the good book and I read, as many of you has been baptized into Christ, have put on Jesus, there is no longer Jew or Greek, slave or free, male or female, because you are all one in Jesus Christ. Then I closed the book and I said, if you're one with Jesus, then you're one with all kinds of folks. And if you ain't, then you ain't. Jordan said, yeah, well, what happened then? Pastor said, well, the deacons, they took me into the back room. They told me they didn't want to hear that kind of preaching anymore. Jordan said, well, what did you do then? He said, I fired them deacons. The pastor said this, and I love this line. He said, I preached that church down to 4 people.
Mm.
And after that, the church just grew and grew.
Mm. Wow.
I preached the church down to 4 people, and then it just grew and grew.
Wow.
Maybe you can see why I love that story and why when I read about Jesus here, I think of that. You know, folks don't need to, as hard as it can be to hear and to take, we don't need to water down the truth about ourselves, about this thing called faith, life and love. We as ministers, we as communities of faith ought to respect one another enough to be truthful with one another. And I think ultimately it can be a source of great liberation and joy.
I ain't got nothing after that.
That's awesome.
That's hard to top.
I mean, I'm sitting here and there's a church going through my head that I love dearly, and they struggle. And it's because some people tried to tell the truth and he got thrown off a cliff.
Yep. It happens.
And I think, you know, it amends. I want to amend what I said earlier. For some of us, truth-telling brings relief.
Yeah.
For others, it makes the burden heavier. And it makes some people want to run. And I don't know what the difference is. Mm.
This is so true just in our political and social and even religious dialogues and conversations we're having right now. I mean, in our country. You know, if Jesus were to say these things right now, a lot of the very people who are gung-ho for Jesus and waving Jesus signs all the way, you know, into power would try to chase him right off a cliff because it's not popular. You know, what's popular is divisive and me and us only and against them.
Nikki, you asked what's the difference. You know, some folks seem to be liberated, like a weight is lifted when confronted with truth. Others just, it's, I think you said, a weight around them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I have the answer, but I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I see it. I don't know that I see it most often, but I, what comes to mind is counseling sessions.
Mm-hmm.
When one person either divulges a truth that was not known, usually a very hurtful thing that happened, or whether one person says, you know, I know that this happened. There's immediately tears, there's immediately hurt, and sometimes anger and frustration. But more times than not, there's also a, well, I've been found out, but maybe the grace there is that I don't have to carry that weight anymore so heavily. That, you know, because once truths are named and put out there, they can be dealt with. Now, sometimes relationships can be repaired. Sometimes they can't be. But I've seen what you're talking about. I don't know that I have the answer, but I've seen it.
Part of me, I got thinking about, you know, we're saying Jesus is telling the truth. And so what is kind of the core of the truth that Jesus is getting at? And I think that part of what Jesus is saying to these people is, you are not the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of it is it Jesus is challenging their idea of who matters.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is challenging their idea of what's most important. They think they are. And Jesus is saying, you're important, but you're not the only one who's important. You know, we watch it in four-year-olds when they get challenged with the fact that they're not the center of the world anymore. Mm-hmm. And sometimes some of us never grow out of that. Sometimes we still throw tantrums, even as adults, when that truth gets held up to us.
But you know what's interesting? I don't know what to do with this, but verse 28, when they heard this, all in the synagogue were filled with rage. When they heard this, when they heard what? Well, just before that, he was reminding them of stories they would have known.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. You know, it's mirror holding. You know, he's not knocking them over the heads with something they've never heard before. And they're saying, you know, that's utterly untrue. He's reminding them of what they know.
Yeah.
That that God loves all, and that our lives are given meaning not by being recipients of everything, but giving, not being served, but serving. As you said, not being the center of the universe, but putting others first. And I don't know. It strikes me as really interesting that what fills them with rage is telling the truth of what they knew to be true as well, holding up that mirror and saying, this is it.
Yeah, but knowing something and being confronted with the idea that you're not doing that thing, that's what Jesus is saying. Like, we all know what we're supposed to do. Kind of learn that in elementary school. You know, if we don't get it from the gospel, we get it from manners and such. But but when somebody tells a story, it's like when, now the name's leaving me. Who was Nathan told the story to David, right? After about the land. And then David goes, oh, well, that's not the way that should be. And Nathan says, that's you. And somebody says, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and we talked about this in last week's podcast when we just kind of talked about the Isaiah passage that Jesus quoted and said, now it's fulfilled. And that's the context of last week's text, that they would have known that. And yet, the same way we talk about the Beatitudes and so many other things, somehow we take something and we put it on a shelf and we can sentimentalize it so that we hear it. And we think, oh, this is our faith. This is nice. And this is God. And this is Jesus. And this is us. But we lose the very radical aspect of changing the dynamics of how we actually live and see other people. And that's, you're exactly right. I mean, that's what he's challenging them to do is we're not the center of the universe. And we have to keep being reminded of that. You mentioned, Daniel, you mentioned Clarence Jordan, and I love Clarence Jordan, and I love his translation of Luke. For our listeners who aren't familiar, not only did he found Koinonia Farms, but he was a PhD Greek scholar from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. So he translated from the original Greek into Southern American dialect of the 40s and 50s in the context of the American South in the 40s and 50s. So he's translating this passage, and it's all taking place in Georgia. So David and Nikki, you'll appreciate this. Jesus is reading in the church in Valdosta. And he says, and I'm telling you straight, there were a lot of, and of course, this is, again, in the 40s and 50s, there were a lot of white widows in Georgia during the time of Elijah, when the skies were locked up for 3 years and 6 months, and there was a great drought everywhere. But Elijah didn't stay with any of them. Instead, he stayed with a Negro woman over in Terrell County. Maybe Terrell County. I don't know how you say it in Georgia. And then there were a lot of sick white people during the time of the great preacher Elisha. But Elisha didn't heal any of them, only Naaman the African. What Clarence Jordan is doing is intentionally pulling all of these great scriptures, a part of the great Christian tradition of the white Southern Protestant South, off the shelves of great spiritual sentimentality, and bam, here it is. You know, here's the confrontation that you have, that we're not the center of the universe. What would that sound like today?
I was about to ask you that. What,
immigrants,
what would it be
and
today?
Muslims and Mexicans and, man, as Chris Christopherson said, you know, reckon we just nail him up if he'd come down again.
And they threw Jordan off a cliff.
Yeah.
In fact, if I have the story straight, after he died, I think he died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
They dumped his body naked on the farm.
Yeah, a pauper's burial with no ceremony, no recognition or anything from anybody in the town, except for the people at Cornelia Farms.
Yeah. Well, truth telling is dangerous to ourselves. It's dangerous to do.
You know, celebrated, as we're doing this podcast, we just celebrated the birthday of Martin Luther King, who has become a part of our national sentimentality. Yeah. But it wasn't anything sentimental and nice about him in 1968 when he was shot. He was very frightening and scary to the majority of people.
Yeah.
Go on with what you were saying. Truth-telling is dangerous.
I was just going to say, it's dangerous. I'm reminded and also haunted by the words, I think it was by the priest Daniel Berrigan, who said, if you're going to follow Jesus, you better look good on wood. Price we pay. It's the way it must be, though. I don't know if you want to end on that little ray of sunshine.
Well, it all comes back to Jim Carrey, right? You know, the great thing about Liar Liar is a great story of redemption and hope. And all the pain that he goes through, all the pain he causes because he's such a great liar, but then all the pain that he personally goes through in this transformation of not being able to lie, of having to tell the truth, and having to face the consequences with others and with himself. It's a great story of redemption. He reunites with his family. He becomes the father his child always wanted. I mean, it's kind of a fairy tale ending to some degree, but really it's not. It's a great story of redemption and the power of truth through great pain to bring forth healing and reconciliation. And isn't that what the gospel's all about? Redemption, healing, and reconciliation.
Amen. Well, I hope we'll all maybe be less afraid of walking by the mirror after this conversation, because we probably could all spend a spell in front of one. And hopefully, with God's help, learn and grow as we notice these truths that are so much a part of our world and our lives. May God help us as we try to make the world a better place and do a better job of ushering in God's kingdom. Thank you all for this conversation, and I look forward to next time.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Good night.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session, at faithelement.net. Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.